Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to back to another episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. Episode 5, I believe. I know we've been away for a while. It's already gone, but let us welcome you back and wish you a happy Thanksgiving, a happy holiday season. Hope you are enjoying it with family and friends and basketball and the play-in tournament and all of that jazz. Shout out to the Lakers. But we'll get back to that here in a second. I am Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour, head basketball coach at Bridgeton Academy. Coach Whit, how are you?
I'm well. Glad to be back at it. Ripping and running. Busy time of year for everybody. Holiday to holiday and everything that everybody has going on. So same here. Another week to go. We're in exam week for our guys this week. So quiet on the game front. Finish up in Springfield at the Basketball Showcase. And then get back January 2nd to work. So that's where I'm at.
Sounds good. Well, I mean, out the gate, since you're talking about, you know, the prep scene, how is everything going up in the NEPSAT area right now? I know that I believe it was earlier last week you were mentioning about teams beating teams but not necessarily being ranked. If you need a refresher, I could find that quote for you. No. But I think you know what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, that was Twitter. That was my Twitter game.
Yeah,
and I've just had some fun with it and actually got some reactions at this showcase, the Scholar Roundball Classic, typically held at Babson College, that we were at this past weekend. I got some feedback that people were reading my stuff. But it's just polls are polls on every level. We had it with the Florida State College Football Playoff. We have it with college basketball. So poll and the prep's different, some different organizations and groups began it a year or so, maybe a couple years ago, actually. And I say, God, I don't know, slippery slope, honestly. So I'll give you some of that. But the reality recently was, that's what was going on. So how valid any poll is in the early season is a fair question. And here's the prep scene in a nutshell. There's a lot of good teams, and not just in NEPSAC, by the way. So we're lucky to be in AAA NEPSAC, which is the highest level division. But there's terrific teams down throughout all the classifications. And then you go outside of New England. I'm not a New England snob. There's some terrific programs and people doing good things. So the bottom line, which I've been saying for some time, is the prep landscape is very, very different than your father's prep landscape. And a lot of schools that never in the past would have considered having a very strong basketball team now have them. Much like I usually say Division III, like colleges, where, again, years ago, I think being too strong in any particular program was kind of viewed, as incongruent with academics, but now academic schools, want what they want too, and that often includes strong basketball teams or some other team, if you will. Usually broad-based, by the way, now. So there's that, okay? My other side of the polling, just to give my Gene Clemens 3-minute rant while you sit there quietly, my other thing on polls way back when was, like, at the prep level, no one needs a poll coming out in, say, September, October, before anyone's played a game, with these families that are sending their guys to private schools, whether that's for 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, or in my case, mostly one, but it doesn't matter. New to the private school scene, oh, by the way, their school got ranked, 20th or 50th or 10th or first for that matter. But it's like, okay, so now we're just contributing again to the real world marketing stuff that is, private school and, is our system. So I'm not totally opposed to it. I get it. Schools, education is business, and ours is certainly that too. But whether or not in the education business of athletics, we want to put undue and sometimes invalid notoriety on some of this stuff, I don't could do without it. But it's not going away, and it's changed like everything else, so I'm cool with it. I just like to express my opinion every once in a while. There.
I mean, it had a little get off my lawn-ish type of feel to it for right there at the end. But other than that, I think it's the same thing that everybody deals with. But when it comes to rankings and how you should or should not look to navigate rankings, I think that what you said is 100% the truth. It's not going anywhere. And it's only going to get worse. Like it's only going, not even, and worse is a bad word.
Right.
Worse is a bad word. It's only
further magnified,
more prevalent in the space to be ranked. I don't think necessarily it's a bad thing if you're willing to be on the front end of the progress.
Right.
A lot of what we see in sports, whether it's youth league, high school, college, professional ranks, the people who are on the front end of the progress tend to take advantage of the wave before the other people catch on to it and therefore get a head start out in front. It's why social media has become so important. You know, getting the eyeballs on your program so that they know, A, you exist, and B, they can see how you kick your game, you know, so to speak. I think it's a great thing. But the polls it's an interesting thing when it comes to polls, because there's two trains of thought, and I want to get your opinion on this. Because we saw what happened to Florida State, and I think it's interesting that everybody has a beef with Florida State being out. Nobody has a beef with Georgia being out, which to me is actually the worst snub of the two. I'll explain, but I want to get your thought process on this idea of best versus most deserving. Because I don't necessarily think those two are the same things.
Right. So here's what I'll say to you. One, I agree on your Georgia point, even though you didn't go, I agree with you, okay? And number two, I would say, you know, the whole Florida State or Georgia snub takes away from, to me, the real talking point, which is, again, it's stupid that there's simply four teams in a playoff, which I know is changing. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So there should be 12, 8, whatever's in all, you know, sub-conferences, right, every level. Now you're always going to have someone's going to get left out. Sure. But when you're at 12 schools, the schools not getting left out are Georgia and in this case, Florida State. So it takes away from me for the real preposterousness of the four. So that then speaks to best versus most deserving. They clearly want the best since they're only taking four, and shame on them, because athletics is about competition and most deserving. And so I think in this case, although you might know better, it sounds like Florida State might be the most deserving or more deserving, and they don't need to be kept out because minus a quarterback, they're not viewed as the best. And the reality is football by many is considered to be the ultimate team sport. So if we're going to buy into any of that, then in a playoff system, the most deserving team should be there, not simply the ones we think are the best. Leave that to the polling and the rankings. That's where that stuff comes in. 4-star prospect, 5-star prospect, blah, 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 right? The dump is littered with 4- and 5-star prospects who didn't pan out. So it really shouldn't be about the best. It should be about the most deserving.
And that's a logical argument, right? it shouldn't be about the best. It should be about the most deserving. If you're going to make that argument, then cool. But we can't have it both ways, right? We can't have it both ways. We can't say that it's about the most deserving and it's not about the best, and then watch Georgia lose to an Alabama team that got hot right at the right time, that clipped them, and go, that team who has not lost in almost 2 years, the last time they lost was in the SEC championship game to Alabama, which they were able to come back and still win the national championship that year. They're not deserving of a spot over who cares? Right. The Big Ten has not fared well in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
And by default, Michigan hasn't fared well in the college football playoff. Everybody talks about TCU getting waxed in the championship. Nobody talks about the fact that TCU team had to get to the championship somehow, and that was by beating Michigan. So they get to, off the strength of one of the weakest Big Tens I've seen in recent memory, they get to waltz into the college football championship playoff after beating a okay Ohio State team. We've got Washington getting in off an undefeated season in the Pac-12, which is weak. It's been weak. It's going to stay weak. And after the next week, it won't even exist anymore how it's existed in the past. And nobody blinks an eye at Washington getting in, even though their two best wins are over Oregon. And who did Oregon beat? Nobody but a bunch of Pac-12 teams, not named Washington. And so I'm sitting here looking at it and going, the uproar should be over the NCAA and or whomever is in charge of the college football playoff, because it doesn't say that it's not recognized as the NCAA championship. Whoever's in charge of it, not getting together in a special session and going, we're changing this right now. We're not waiting until next year. We don't need to see 5 and 6 teams in bowl games. So we'll get them the F out of here right now, so we don't have to see Georgia Southern in a bowl game when they couldn't even go 500 on the season. We don't need to see XYZ other team in the bowl game, even though they couldn't. Now all of those teams will drop down, because we're going to put this 12-team playoff into effect immediately. If there was ever a time for a special session where we're going to change the rules up right now, right this instant, it would have been this year, because as you said, it's not even about the best. There were at least 6 to 8 teams who were without a doubt deserving of making the college football playoff.
Yeah, total agreement. Sorry to cut you off. Total agreement with you.
Yeah, no, you're fine. But I do like the hypocrisy of how we champion Florida State without their quarterbacks and nobody coming to bat for Auburn years ago with Jason Campbell when they went undefeated and they weren't down their starting quarterback. They were at full strength and nobody said anything. When nobody wanted to hear the argument that UCF should be in the dance, even though they were undefeated and had beaten some good teams that year, nobody even wanted to have that conversation. So I think it's interesting now that it's Florida State. People want to go and bang the table for them. But when you look at Florida State's actual, like the teams that they beat, LSU is their best victory. And I'm sorry, like LSU is really good, but Alabama waxed LSU. Like Alabama put the screws to LSU. Like LSU let every single team they ever played this year put up points on them. So if that's going to be your best win of the season, I don't know. Well, it's unfortunate all around, and we see it trickle down everywhere.
I'll tell you one thing I do know. I like to dabble in conspiracy. You know, I'm not a card-carrying conspiracy member, but I dabble. And my conspiracy theory is the deep pockets of Michigan and beyond are deeper, obviously, than a Florida state and some of the people. And then the deeper outside, and that's outrageous, I know, but the real deep pockets are the same deep pockets that possibly have the referees in the NFL confused. And I'm obviously jumping ahead a little bit, but I was thinking about it. And I said, you know what? The NFL can do better. Okay. And I'm specifically talking about the, you know, and we can get into it, but the no call from a week ago with Grant and Bay Casey, and then the offside call this week. And I was trying to wrestle that beast. And along with this college thing, and the common denominator I had was, you know what, both generate media attention, controversy, eyeballs. So it's like, you know what, to what degree is it serving them well to actually come off as inept versus getting it right? And it might be that by being inept in both cases, they're creating more revenue for somebody somewhere than if they actually got it right. That's my conspiracy take of the day.
That is a very non-tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. I think that's a very calm under control conspiracy theory.
Well, I tell students this. I used to, you know, you could teach some history from a conspiracy theory perspective just to get the contrary perspectives. And to your point, I say, here's the deal. And you know this, and everyone else knows this. Like, sometimes the line between conspiracy, I will kid around. I'll say, hey, conspiracy or reality, man, they're pretty freaking close sometimes. You know, like, they're, you know, that line between them can be close. It's sometimes reality is just as hard to compute as the out, you know, as the crazy conspiracy theory. Anyway,
well, I think that's the beauty of a good conspiracy theory,
right?
Like, a good conspiracy theory knows how to stay close enough to the line that you have to go, it makes sense. So I don't know if I agree, but it makes sense. It's a possibility, right?
So I'm throwing it out there in this case because I agree with you wholeheartedly on the, you know, I sometimes as a you know, get frustrated when we don't make changes in the moment, in real time, when you can, and find all these reasons why not, like, you know, bureaucracy or whatever it is. And I'm talking in a school, in a government, right? Like, that still has guns, you know, we could go anywhere we want. Like, why can't we just make change in real time? And there's all these reasons why not. So college football could have, or with review, you know, that's what gets me about the NFL, with so much video review and replay. Like, come on, man, just, we've already gone the rat. We have gone down the rabbit hole. Can we just clean up the rest of it? But if the answer is no, we don't want to, because we want mistakes and kind of relish them. And we want to see Mahomes lose his shit on the sideline and then talk about that. See, it's good for the product. Mm. And I go, So anyway, I'll be curious if when I get some feedback from our listeners, what they think on any of that. But
let's stay there, because I think that the Kansas City thing is interesting. I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, well, you know, it's the wide receiver's fault, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think that comes from people who just don't know football. Wide receivers walk up there and are conditioned that the first thing they do is to look to the sideline and or give a signal to the referee, whether they are on or off the line of scrimmage. If you are over the line, the referee is normally telling you to get back. So the idea, say it again.
I'm a little amped up, so a little jerk. I'm going to stop you there and say, because you said, hey, because the two football people I listened to were RC and Shannon Sharp today, right, on First Take. And similarly, both said that not only, what's his name again? The wide receiver for KC,
Kadarius Toney.
Toney came from the Giants. Both said he didn't. The way that works typically is the receiver checks with the official, right? I played enough football to know that. He apparently did none of that. So he lined up and never once looked anywhere. So at which case, now he is so egregiously over the line, is it their prerogative to say, hey, by the way, back up? They don't. That's where that one's kind of funny.
Except he wasn't egregiously over the line.
He was, well, he's far enough over the line. The referee looking down the line couldn't see the ball.
He was without a doubt covering up the ball.
Right.
That is not even, it's not even disputable. Right. He's covering up the ball. But he's not, like, it's not egregious. And, and not for nothing, if you look at an NFL game, a lot of times the signal doesn't come with a direct, like, reference to the receiver. It'll just be in the way they line up, and then you'll see them make a quick adjustment. So the fact that the referee didn't even, like just let it get off without even, and maybe he did. Maybe some audio will come out on Wednesday when they start releasing audio clips that have the referee saying, hey, back up, back up. Then we have a different story.
What you got me wondering though is, because here's my line on it, and I'm good either way. My initial reaction was in total agreement with Patrick Mahomes on several fronts, but including, wait a second, that's not a game-changing play he's making. And in all sports, we talk about in basketball, no harm, no foul, and all this stuff where, particularly late in games, you don't want the referees deciding the outcome. So, I mean, my initial reaction was just that it's bogus call. But if, in fact, the unwritten rule in football is that the receiver is the one that checks, and I'm pretty sure Shannon or RC, one of them, I think it was Shannon, one of them said.
I don't know what RC would know about it. RC sometimes does a lot of talking where he doesn't know what he's talking about. I will tell you my beef with RC is a look at me kind of dude.
I like him from what I see, getting on my nerves sometimes. Okay, that's fine.
And he's a defensive back, so he should watch his mouth talking about offensive stuff because he's a defensive back. He doesn't line up anywhere to do anything on the offensive side of the ball.
But what he said was, I'm cool. What he said though that makes a lot of sense because again, these guys know more. You know, Jesus Christ, I get my football from them, so it's alignment. An assignment, football 101, alignment and assignment, no matter which side of the ball you're on, okay? Alignment and assignment. So if the unwritten rule in football is that it is on the onus is on the receiver or tight end to check their position with the ref, then I say it's Tony's fault if he didn't check. If, in fact, referees, and I thought this, they talked about it, but they sketched over so quick I didn't get it. If in fact there's evidence that referees often on their own tell guys, hey, then okay, what are you doing not in that situation, or did you? But if in fact the unwritten rule in the NFL is you check, if you don't check, don't tell, you know, now don't ask, don't tell. I'm the referee, you know, now you get what you get.
I'll tell you both things you said. There's one answer. Yes. On both things that you said, there's one answer. It's the same answer. Yes. It's an unwritten rule. And the rule of thumb is to help the referee do his job. Hey, go up to the line. Make sure the ref knows you're on. Make sure the ref knows you're off. That has been, that's been a thing forever, right? Cool. It's also known that referees will tell you, hey, back up 15, back up 17, back up 85. Like, they do that all the time. So for there to be no communication either way from the wide receiver or from the referee, to me, feels weird.
What was the down and distance?
I don't remember the down and distance.
Third, I feel like it was 3rd and 15 or something.
It may have been.
That 5-yard penalty made it 4th and 15. It might have been 3rd and 10.
And here's the thing that I also just don't understand. If it's an offensive penalty, Why is the play still going on?
Yeah, I didn't quite get that either. So
that's a part where I just and that's a part where I just don't understand within the game. If it's an offensive offsides, why is the play still going on? It is an automatic penalty. It's not a free play. The defense doesn't get a free play. That's not how this thing works. If the offense jumps offsides, it's over. The play is dead right there. If the defense jumps offside, the play's not dead. It's a free play for the offense. They keep continuing unless there's a defender unabated to the quarterback. So I don't even understand how they're able to get off the play to be able to have that happen. But furthermore, to then go, well, this is something. Now it's going to make people who have no other life go back and look at every single time somebody lines up to see how many times somebody lines up covering up the football. Because again, my issue is, it's not like he is a yard over the ball. His foot is on the ball to where if you're on the sideline looking from the side judge's view, he's covering up the ball. Cool. Let me see how many other times I can find evidence of, and you know somebody's doing it because somebody has no life. Someone has that opportunity. Somebody thinks, oh, this is going to make great content that I can make a lot of streams off of. I can get a lot of, somebody is going to find that. And if it's inconsistent, if there's an inconsistency in it, it's going to go back to your conspiracy theory, which is, why did you do it this time? If you let it get off in the second quarter, why did you not let it get off right now?
Yeah, and if the NFL was smart, obviously, and I think they are, they would do it, you know, and conduct their own review and study of it and kind of see what they find on that. Fascinating. The other fascinating piece at the end of the play that got a little attention but obviously didn't impact was, you know, Tony getting disgusted with the idea that he didn't get the ball from Mahomes or was held, whatever it was, coming off the line. And then because he pouted and dogged it a little bit and didn't get further downfield, Kelce was able to make the lateral across the field to him behind the ball, and he goes in for a touchdown. So pretty fascinating. It's to me, it's made a little more interesting because Tony was this highly rated and picked it high in the draft by the Giants, who was discarded for a third round pick by KC. And so he ends up being this guy at the center of the storm.
Yeah, I also think it's really strange because New York Giants fans can't stop talking about him. It's like, yo, it's over. He's gone. Like, move on. They can't stop talking about him. Every time something comes up, my timeline was full of Giants fans just doing nothing but mocking Kadarius Toney. But last time I checked, it's like, you shouldn't be mad at Toney. You should be mad at your front office. Like, your front office drafted him, or you should be mad at your organization because your front office drafted him. Your coaching staffs didn't know how to use him. He got pissed off. Then he got injured. Then they got rid of him because he was pissed off and injured. He goes over to Kansas City, wins the championship, scores a touchdown in the championship game. Like, and not for nothing, but what has those like? There's no receiver on the Giants that's head and shoulders better than Kadarius Toney if Kadarius Toney is locked in, which is a big question mark for him, by the way. But so it's interesting to see how people will get their lick back whenever they choose to.
I got a question for you. I'm the one leading the charge here. So the first question is, do you hear my computer dinging? Will that come through this or not? Do you not hear
it? No, I don't hear it at all.
Okay, good. Awesome. All right, my real question is this. As a football expert, commentator, announcer, all things high school, college, and professional, will Bill Belichick be the coach of the Patriots next year?
Yes, he should.
No, I didn't say he should. Okay.
Yes, he will, and yes, he should.
Yeah.
Yes, he will, and yes, he should. And I'll explain it very simple. I think this is what everybody that has decided that Bill Belichick no longer knows football has missed. The New England Patriots have one of the best defenses in the National Football League. They have one of the best defenses in the National Football League. They have an offense that doesn't support it at all. So he didn't just all of a sudden forget what he was doing. We talk about this all the time with coaching, right? Like, these coaches don't all of a sudden just forget how to coach. He's got a bad batch of groceries, if you will, to take a big tuna reference. He's got a bad batch of groceries.
Which
part of that is on him.
Right. Critics would say a large part of that is on him.
Yeah, but I agree with you.
You
got to give him credit for the defense too then.
Absolutely right. Say, hey, listen, right? I'm surprised. Yeah, you surprised me with your answer. I thought, because I think the lion's share of fans and prognosticators, maybe because it's a better story if he leaves, that might be where that's going. You know, talk about the issue number one, and if he leaves, there's more to talk about than if he stays. So therefore, let's promote the fact that he's on his way out. I think he's not going anywhere either, just so we're clear on this pod.
There's more in journalism. There's more juice in negativity.
Right.
Always. Yep. If you look at what the news always, you know, like hung its hat on, it wasn't on the feel-good stories. The feel-good stories always made page five. It was always salacious headlines, attention-grabbing headlines, mostly from negativity. How did tabloids rise up and take over the news game? It was on negative stuff. It wasn't on positive stuff. And so when we look at these stories and these journalists who now are being paid, right, their livelihood is based off of engagement. What's going to get the most engagement? It's going to be the negative stuff. If somebody comes out and writes a story that says Bill Belichick is doing one of his best coaching jobs of his career, people would murder him, and then they would be done with it in a day. But if I come out and say, should Bill Belichick be replaced? Now I can run that story in perpetuity for the rest of the year because they're not going to be good this year. And so even into the offseason, I've got an evergreen story for the foreseeable future about whether or not Bill Belichick should be here. The negative always works. That's why people run to it. And it's why some people who still believe in real quality, high-end journalism, we don't ascend as fast because we're not willing to just engage in the negative simply for the clicks.
Well, I've got two other evergreen stories for you. One, I'm happy to say, you know, goes against a pronouncement you made many weeks ago in this pod when you said Zappy Fever was officially over. But in fact, Zappy Fever is like, you know, COVID. It just manifests itself in new ways. So we don't need to get into that, but Zappy Fever is not over.
I must have misspoke. I should have said it should be over.
Okay. Yeah.
I must, you know, rewind and go back to what I said and say it should be over. Like people entertaining this thought process that Bailey Zappi should be their starting quarterback are only people who look at Brock Purdy and think that what Brock Purdy is doing is somehow duplicatable. And it's just like not, because you don't have the Brock Purdy weapons.
Right. Well, yeah. And I or think
the offensive coordinator.
Right. So I'm all on board a number one, you know, number two pick in the draft being a quarterback for sure. I do all things in season NBA tournament, obviously, including the Lakers, including the setup, and including the Celtics. So I've got a couple reactions to all of that. The Celtics, I was going to let you fly, but you want me to let it fly?
Fly. Yeah. You know what? I'll fly if you want me to fly now.
You fly, and then I'll get on your wings.
I'll keep it very simple. It was very short-sighted of basketball fans to think that the play-in, that this in-season tournament was a bad idea. You had to look no further than soccer to know that an in-season tournament is one of the only ways to make regular season games in long seasons where there's a bunch of games matter. The only way to do it is to make it matter and to attach some money to it that makes it feasible for not for the stars, but for the next level guys. I don't know if you saw it, but they said that Indiana, the Pacers, their team, $500,000 to the winner would represent it was either a quarter of their total salaries for the season. Now, obviously, to LeBron James, that doesn't matter, but you know what does matter to LeBron James? Any type of championship, any type of trophy matters to AD. So to the ones who have the money, the championship, the trophy, the hardware matters. To the people who don't have the money matters. And to the fans, what we got was first, second round playoff level hype and first, second round playoff level basketball leading into Christmas, where we all know is kind of when basketball starts mattering from the NBA's perspective. Anyway, this Lakers team can win a championship. Not the Lakers that we see all the time, but the Lakers that we saw in the play-in games, in the in-season tournament games, that Lakers team can win a championship. The question is, can they bring that Lakers team to the court every single night when you get closer to cutting time? So loved it. Love what it is. I think they need to tweak those. They need to tweak the floors, because some of it got a little bit difficult to look at. But other than that, I thought it was a fantastic idea. I thought it would be a fantastic idea from the beginning. And I just can't understand why more basketball people didn't look at it and make the immediate correlation to what they do in soccer. But I guess maybe there's just not a lot of basketball, soccer crossover fans.
Well, I would say this. Good stuff by you there. I would say this. I think we're going to see the addition of at least another one, if not more than that, in time, since it was such a big success for all the reasons you mentioned. And I think what you'll see is something like this, where one is rewarded with the cash, okay? And when we have our one in the next doldrum period of, say, you know, March or something, right? Maybe late February, after the All-Star break, we'll see that the winner will get an automatic bid to the playoffs, or they'll get some bump in seed, or the team that goes the furthest, that's a non-playoff team, will get a play-in. But they'll put a playoff incentive into the in-season tournament, a little bit, obviously, like All-Star Baseball gave the winning All-Star team home field advantage in baseball. They'll do something like that for basketball. That's a tweak they could make. The controversy that everyone was talking about, that I agree with, it was the point differential and running up the score. Like, that put people in an odd position. And I don't know if there's a solution to that. I think everyone's man enough to accept it. Like, there are a couple solutions. Keep your starters in and don't get blown out. And, you know, that's the old football and Billy Tubbs, Oklahoma basketball teams. Like, don't ask me to freaking keep the score down. You go recruit some better players. So, I mean, philosophically, but there's an unwritten rule in basketball. Like, when the thing's over, you don't pile on any more than you maybe need to, but there you needed to. And obviously the Celtics and Missoula ran into that.
Well, and here's what I'll say too. I love all the unwritten rules until money gets involved.
Right.
Once it's money, like, the reason that there needs to be the point incentive in there is because teams will just shut it down in the fourth quarter and go, oh, we're going to save our legs for tomorrow. No, you're not saving your legs for tomorrow. You got to try to compete all the way to the end, run this score down, because this is going to keep you from advancing if you get blown out by 35 and 40 points in the game. Don't just say, oh, it's over, and then let them run it up. Like, you stay in the fight because your fans came to watch you play. They came to watch you fight to the end. Michael Jordan wasn't putting the ice bags on his knees when he was down 35, 40 points. He was putting the ice bags on his knees when they were up 35, 40 points. And so, like, I think that there's the opportunity for that, but I think you missed it. I think you missed where the advancement is. The advancement is a tournament for the teams that don't make the playoffs.
Don't they call it a play-in round?
No. Not something that gets you into the playoffs, because they already have that set up with the play-in game.
Right?
Yeah. That's essentially a mini tournament.
You're talking about a separate tournament of non-playoff teams?
A separate tournament of non-playoff teams that will decide who gets the number one pick.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And now we're incentivizing you to play out the entire season. No more tanking.
No more tanking. Yeah.
Because once you get into that tournament, if you've tanked by sitting your best player and saying your best player is out for the season, i.e. Yeah. Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You can't then just bring those guys back in the tournament for the number one pick. Now you just get beat. But if you know that there's a number one pick attached for the teams that just aren't there yet, I've long said that the way that you build more competitiveness in the NBA is not by giving the worst team in the league the high pick. It's giving the team that's right outside of the playoffs the highest pick. Because now you make them instantly better. Right now, you make a quasi playoff team, a step away playoff team, into somebody that can be a potential playoff team when you add a Victor Wembanyama to Golden State. Right? You add a Victor Wembanyama to Golden State instead of to San Antonio, that's in full rebuild mode, and figure out what you're going to do now. Like, what does that look like now?
Yeah,
I think that's where we're heading. At least I hope that's where we're heading.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I'm wondering what it does for the absolute atrocious teams, but maybe it just forces them to be better organizations and things like that. I'm not sure. In Boston, there was a little conflicted view of how things went, because Michael Hawley, among others, but many fans probably didn't want to see Boston raise this type of banner because they're too used to feeling like, Tatum or Brown or anybody, is more concerned with, all-star status and MVPs of an all-star game rather than championship. So in Boston, the view was, I'm kind of glad they didn't win it, because I didn't want to see the reaction the kind of Lakers gave in celebration, which I thought was fine and good. I would have done the same thing if I'm the Lakers. You got to find the small victories. But is there reason to be concerned about the Celtics? Yes, because once again, in a tough environment of some sort, they didn't get it done. I will only say, as a Kristaps Porzingis strong supporter on this pod, hey, listen, they didn't have their full team, so I'm going to give them a pass. But did it raise my eyebrows again that they came up short as constituted? 100% yes. And do they have something to prove to my eye about getting it done and keeping the ball moving and making winning plays in crunch time or the third quarter? Yes. And speaking of Wemby, I don't know if a generational player, and I haven't watched it, I don't know if a generational player loses 12 games in a row. I'd like to know if that's ever happened in the NBA, whether a multi-generational player has been on a team where they've lost as many games in a row. So, and is there reason to be concerned?
That's an easy answer, and it's probably no.
Right.
Because the point is that Wembanyama is not LeBron James. He didn't walk into the NBA ready. He's just tall and long and athletic, but he does not have NBA type of stuff yet. He just has the raw materials. He's very Giannis-like. Giannis was the same way when he came in. Raw materials, but because Giannis came in under the radar,
right,
he was able to mature and grow in rather anonymity as opposed to Wembanyama, who comes in as essentially the byproduct of what we've seen Giannis turn into.
Right.
So I think that that's hurting him in a certain respect, because he's got to figure it out. He's got to figure it out physically, and he's got to figure it out mentally at the same time.
I'm excited about your trip to Cycle Bar. I'm assuming as part of your workout, though, you are going to finalize our deal as our corporate sponsor. I'm assuming that's hopeful.
You know, it's me still trying to fight the good fight and get Cycle Bar
I'm trying to get the Barking Chicken here in Harrison.
Let's go, Barking Chicken. We're gonna do a live. We're gonna do some live shows from the Barking Chicken.
Love that. They love that too.
Live shows from the Barking Chicken. But yeah, I'll get you out of here on this. College. We didn't do a whole lot on college basketball. What's your biggest takeaway so far? Watching whatever it is you've been able to watch to this point. I know basketball is, your team has been pretty hot lately. So
what are you saying? You're my team, my Kansas?
Yes. No, I mean your actual team.
You've been
ripping and running.
Yeah, that is very true. You know what? I'm gonna say my take is that there's no dominant team. Again, I envision a season and probably not exactly like last year, because Connecticut ultimately was a dominant team that we all saw for a stretch in the tournament. But so I think it's another year that is ripe for the FDU, Purdue, and all sorts of other upset specials as it gets further along. Clemson's got my eye. BYU has got my eye. There's a few teams, Gonzaga, not quite as good as they've been. Can Purdue run it back? We obviously, maybe yes, in a Big Ten that in basketball may not be what it's been either. So that will become a bigger story, kind of Virginia style, by the end of the season. Is there redemption for Purdue? So that's a couple of the stories I'm tracking. There's a few other under the radar, very strong teams that, but I'll tell you this. My other one just is not to this point about good teams, but I watched Syracuse play my friend Eddie Cooley with Georgetown on Saturday. And, Eddie looked like me coaching a bunch of post-grads, pulling his hair out, wondering what the hell they're doing out there. It certainly didn't look like your vintage Eddie Cooley, cohesive, hard-nosed, smart-playing MFers. It just looked like a tough at-home, what have we got here, lost. So there are some of those stories lurking out there in NIL land too, meaning like there's so much fur flying in college basketball right now that Eddie's not the only one with some problems on his hands.
Yeah, I will just say this. At the beginning of the year, I thought that Duke and North Carolina were sitting in positions where their coaches really had to prove something. Both started off a little on the shaky side. North Carolina has seemed to buoy a little bit. Duke doesn't look good at all. And I fear there may be a change sooner rather than later in Duke. I don't know if they give him the rope to be able to figure it out in year three, four, whatever. Like, I think that if they don't make major strides this year, you'll probably see somebody else in there at Duke next year. Very similar to what we saw in North Carolina before they were able to land Roy Williams. I think that you could definitely see something like that happening. It's unfortunate, but that's the name of the game. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a ripping and roaring 50 minutes of Zebra Stripes podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens. That's Coach Whit LeJour. As always, make sure that you follow us and check us out. Rate us. Give us 5 stars anywhere that you get your podcast. Until next week, you guys stay blessed.